Hello and welcome back to Doc Talk. Last week, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration approved the co-treatment of pegloticase injection plus methotrexate for uncontrolled gout, which was a decision that was bolstered by data from phase 4 of the MIRROR study. In that study, 71% of patients who were treated with this combination therapy achieved a complete response over the course of 6 months. In comparison, roughly 39% of patients who received pegloticase plus placebo achieved a complete response. In a recent statement, Dr. John Botson, who is the rheumatology director at Orthopedic Physicians Alaska, stated that the medical community has been actively engaged in finding therapeutic options for uncontrolled gout that incorporate pegloticase. As one of the primary investigators of the MIRROR study, Botson was keenly aware of the implications of this new FDA decision, noting that this new co-treatment option could allow clinicians to, quote, change outcomes for many uncontrolled gout patients, most of whom have no other treatment option. For this episode of Doc Talk, Botson sat down with associate editor Juliana Grassi and spoke of how combination therapy for gout has led to less infusion reactions and increased efficacy, as well as how clinicians have safely incorporated low-dose methotrexate and what he feels will be the future of gout research.
Thank you so much for being here with me, Dr. Botson. Would you start by sharing any notable takeaways from your phase 4 clinical trial evaluating pegloticase plus methotrexate for the treatment of uncontrolled gout?
Sure. Well, a little background on myself. I'm a private practice rheumatologist in Anchorage, Alaska. And this topic, of course, is really dear to me because we've been taking care of patients with gout for a long time. And the patients, you know, that we're kind of talking about here are the ones that have the most severe disease and really have, in a lot of ways, no other options by the time they come to us. So it's really exciting for me to talk about this, and particularly the medication, which you actually did a good job of pronouncing well, pegloticase. Which we've been using for a few years. And our study, as most of the folks out there know, was a study that looked at using methotrexate, which is an immunomodulating medication, to basically make the pegloticase work better. So in these patients that take pegloticase by itself, they have a lot of infusion reactions. They have a lot of potential for the medication to stop working because the body makes anti-drug antibodies against the medication. And what we came up with was that if we use methotrexate, which is a medicine we use for other rheumatologic diseases, that it actually stops the body from making these antibodies against the drug, and then it allows it to work better or work longer so that the person can actually finish the course. And they have less infusion reactions and less problems with the medication. So our study was basically looking at this. We did a study where the patients all received methotrexate for a month before they got the pegloticase infusion. We chose a very low dose of methotrexate, 15 milligrams once a week, which is always important to patients because if they look up methotrexate, they see it as a chemotherapy medicine. But we're not using those doses. We don't expect hair loss and mouth sores and all the terrible, you know, side effects from chemotherapy. And so they were on that medication, methotrexate, for a month, and then they received their first infusion of pegloticase. And this is an IV medicine. It's given every 2 weeks through the vein. It takes a couple of hours to give the medication. And then basically it works to drop the serum uric acid, which we know is related to gout, down to essentially undetectable when it's working. So really a way to get the person better control of their gout and get rid of this material, the tophaceous material and uric acid buildup that they've had in their bodies. And so basically what the study looked at was looking at the response rates, so how well the medication worked, and what side effects or infusion reactions they might have. The time point was at 6 months. And so we looked at the serum uric acid at month 6, and making sure that it would stay under 6 milligrams per deciliter, which was the cutoff. If it's under that, then the medication was working and the person's gout was being controlled. And so what we found, and the biggest notable takeaways back to the original question, was that 71% of the patients actually had a response in combination versus 38.5% of the patients that were on the placebo or not on methotrexate. And that was pretty consistent with what we've seen in other studies that were on monotherapy, not in combination, right around that 38 to 40% response rate. So basically we had about a 30% increase in the response rate from using the combination. And the second big key takeaway was the safety. So in the previous studies, about a quarter of the patients would have infusion reactions and lead to some of the side effects that came from getting the medication. And in this case, we had 30.6% of the patients on the placebo that didn't take the methotrexate, and only 4.2% of the ones that got the combination. So basically, 90% or so improvement in safety and a doubling of the efficacy by using the combination. So those were huge, huge takeaways.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about having your patients not go home and Google methotrexate and how, you know, it can be a little bit scary. Can you talk a little bit about that and, you know, just how it really does help this specific population of patients with gout?
Yeah, so, you know, that's always the question that comes up from the patients when they look it up, or, you know, even from other physicians that maybe aren't used to using methotrexate. And in the world of rheumatology, we use methotrexate all the time. We use it for rheumatoid arthritis, we use it for psoriatic arthritis, and we're using a dose that's low once a week. And we always ask about the side effects that people traditionally think about, like chemotherapy side effects, mm-hmm. you know, like hair loss and mouth sores and liver function problems. But in the doses that we use in this study and in our other patients, it's a very low risk. And so we monitor for it. But it's one thing that's not scary to patients and really shouldn't be scary to the providers to do it. Because we know in the case of treating gout with pegloticase, we're doing it for a short time, a few months while we're giving the treatment, and then the person's off of it. So even in those patients that maybe at higher risk for liver toxicities or other problems from the methotrexate, we really don't see it. And this study, one of the secondary endpoints, you know, of this and what we looked at was you didn't see any increased risk from being on methotrexate or not. So none of these methotrexate related potential side effects showed up with this course of treatment. So that was really reassuring to us. And really supported what we see in clinical practice. So we don't have to be afraid of this medicine. Like I joke to my patients, I tell them I'm treating gout here, I'm not treating cancer. And so we're not going to put up with a lot of these side effects like we would if you were treating cancer. So
definitely. And what direction do you see this research continuing in?
Well, you know, this was a big step. I'll be honest, this was one of the big steps for a medicine that really kind of was forgotten about when it first came out because of the concerns about side effects. And so now that, you know, we have a way to make the medication not only more efficacious, but also safer, I think the next step is looking at the patient experience, right? So this is a medicine that's given every 2 weeks for 2 hours at a time. You know, that's a pretty significant commitment, even if it's only, you know, 6 months or so to get the treatment. But I think with the patient experience, maybe making the infusion shorter, potentially making the medication easier to administer, that's going to be the next direction of the research. Potentially other ways to mitigate flares. So I didn't mention this before, but whenever you treat someone with gout, and significantly lower their uric acid level, you have a risk of a flare. And we definitely see that about 70% or so of the patients in the study experience a flare. And so trying to give other medications like prednisone or corticosteroids or anti-inflammatories, we try to do these things to prevent these flares. And I think that's where the research is going to go to make that experience better so that people can tolerate the not really side effects of the medicine, but the non-intended results of the medicine to get them able to get through the treatment a little bit better.
And maybe, you know, maybe you can't answer this, but in terms of the flares and combining, you know, or needing to continue or add in different treatments for these things, how, I guess, like, how do you typically approach that? Like, are you able to combine these medications with this treatment as well, or how do you navigate that situation?
Yeah, so this is very commonly done. It's been done even before Peglota case. You know, we treat the flares separately from treating the underlying process. And treating the underlying process is where we use our uric acid lowering agents with, like I said, the most aggressive or advanced being the Peglota case. But at the same time, we know we use things like NSAIDs. So that's your ibuprofens, your naproxens, or your prescription NSAIDs. Or we use colchicine or prednisone or other steroids. So we give these when the person has a flare. In this case, with Peglota case, we always give it up front. So we'll actually give the patient these medicines before they get their first dose in an attempt to hopefully stave off some of these flares, but it still happens, like I said, about 70%. And so then when a person has a flare, then you're doing anything you can to get them through it. Even potentially pain medications. You don't want the person to be comfortable and to get through this while you're treating them.
Mm-hmm. And then when you're treating a patient who is living with gout, how does that differ compared to treating someone else with rheumatic disease?
Yeah, so gout is interesting. When we treat rheumatic diseases, we're already being set up for a lifelong disease. And typically, we're starting medications that the person might have to take for the rest of their life. And that's kind of normal process, normal thinking for the patients and for us as treating physicians. Gout has typically been treated as an episodic disease. And this is not the right thing. We really are trying to change this perception. It's been treated as a disease where the person has a sore toe and they come in and they get, you know, their medications for that day to get through the episode. But then 6 weeks later, they have another episode. And in between that 6 weeks, they don't think about gout at all. They don't think about treating it. They don't think about having any pain until the next episode happens. Well, the problem is with some of these advanced cases, like the patients we're treating with the Peglota case, these are patients that they basically have gout flares every day. They have more time in a flare than they do out of a flare. And it really becomes a life-changing event. And so that's the difference in what we're trying to get across, is these patients need to be treated as if they have a rheumatic disease that is lifelong. So you might be able to treat that flare, but it's a lot better to treat the disease so that those flares don't happen. And that probably means that you need a medication every day. Now, probably not Peglota case, which is, like I said, more of an induction kind of treatment that gets people into control, but then a daily medication, oral medication like allopurinol or febuxostat, that will keep the uric acid levels down so that they don't get the gout flares and they don't start to develop all these complications. I think that's really probably been the biggest challenge for us as we've been trying to educate providers about this, is that it's not an episodic disease. You really need to think of it like hypertension or diabetes. Patients that have these, it's probably mostly genetic. It's mm-hmm. not just because of what they eat. And when patients have gout, they really need to take it as a everyday management type of a situation, not just waiting for the next flare to happen.
Yeah, definitely. And is there anything else that we didn't cover that you wanted to touch on?
I think we covered pretty well. I think, again, just harping on the fact that this isn't a patient problem, this is a disease problem. And I think we all fall into this stereotype that these patients are the reason that they have gout. It's because the patient has a bad diet, because they drink too much, because they don't take care of themselves. And really, the more we learn about gout, we learn that this is a genetic problem. It's probably been passed down from your parents, much like high cholesterol or high blood pressure. And you really need to look at it that way. And it's not a blame the patient because, you know, they went out and had a bunch of alcohol and steak and lobster, and then they had a gout flare the next day, so they couldn't come to work. But that's not because they did something wrong. It's because they have gout and they're not being treated correctly before that event happens. So I think that's probably been the hardest thing to get out there. And that's probably what I've spent the most time focusing on as we've developed these other ways to treat it is, you know, I'm not just treating this, we're looking at this in a different way as a systemic problem. And we know that systemic inflammation, which is what happens with gout, creates other problems too, metabolic syndrome, cardiovascular disease, renal dysfunction. So all of this kind of ties together and we need to look at it that way.
We'd like to thank Dr. Botson for joining the program, and thank you so much for listening. If you like what you heard, make sure to follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook for more. We'll be back this Thursday with a new episode of Doc Talk. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy.